This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. We're all about digital signage and have been since 2006. We cover what's interesting now and what will be interesting and important one day soon. And we filter out all the BS. This podcast is a chance to add depth and color to what we do online, and it gives smart people a chance to really talk about their companies and their ideas. You can hear new episodes weekly on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop, free of charge. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful, ready-made, auto-delivered, and auto-updated content for screens.
Reese Kurtenbach and I have been trying to get together on a podcast call for some time now. It didn't work last year because of Skype and how Skype doesn't seem to get along with business for Skype. Go figure that. But we did manage to have that chat at Digital Signage Expo, which I'm at this week. I'm recording this early in the morning. My voice is a little gruff because I was out very late. Reese runs Daktronics, one of the biggest and best known names in LED. We got a chance to talk about the company's history and what they're doing now in this space, as well as the decision by Daktronics to acquire AdFlow, a digital signage content management system. We chatted at the Daktronics stand on the show floor, so it's a little loud.
All right, we're sitting here at Digital Signage Expo having a very impromptu interview, but all good. Thank you for taking the time.
Well, my pleasure.
So, you've been at Digital Signage Expo before, I know that. It's not a regular part of rotation, really, for the company, though, is it?
We've been consistently coming to DSC for more than just a few years, maybe more than 5 years.
Okay, all right.
And infrequently, maybe before that.
Yeah. I've known about DAC for years and years and years. You guys are one of the biggest and the most well-known for a whole bunch of years in terms of LED display.
Celebrating our 50th year.
1-5 or 5-0?
5-0.
So, yeah, so you go way back to like light bulb displays almost, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it a family company?
So, my father was a co-founder.
Uh-huh.
With another professor of engineering from South Dakota State University.
Uh-huh. In Brookings.
And that's how we got to be where we're at. They wanted to use engineering and start a company. They tried a few different things and hit with legislative voting systems. Mm-hmm. Utah State Legislature was their first system. Mm-hmm. And then that grew.
So what was that? That was just like something with simple numbers saying 51 yay, 49 nay.
Yeah, it was a lot of different things. On each desk, there was a voting council.
Okay.
And so then you would need to have some way, and different states have different voting rules. And then you would have a way to collect all those votes and software that would tie that to the bill that was under consideration at that point,
okay,
or whatever decision they were trying
right
to make. And then a display that would say, this senator or representative voted in this manner, yes, no, abstain.
Okay. All right.
And we did 40, 45 of the state legislative voting systems. They still use some of our stuff at the United Nations. When the wall came down, there was a lot of interest internationally as these countries started to tool up their own governing bodies.
Yeah.
And then sometime in the 90s, we sold that part of the business, the control side, to International Roll Call. It was becoming really a software-based buy that people wanted a PC or tablet at their desks. They didn't want to have a hard console, and so it was just a better fit.
Okay.
And we still cooperate with IRC today, and they do the main work, and we provide them display systems.
Right. And so for a whole bunch of years, you guys have done the scoreboards in sports facilities.
Yes.
And that's really been your calling card, and it's just kind of grown out of that, right?
Yeah, we got started with scoreboards in the 70s as well.
Uh-huh.
Some of
were they light bulb based at that point?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And then some of the coaches from the local university, especially the wrestling coach, had a passion for it, and he thought the systems were not good. Mm-hmm. So we did they called them mat sides, these big triangular scoreboards that you would put beside the wrestling mat.
Yeah.
So the audience could see it, the wrestler, the coaches, they could all see what was going on. And we sold many of those systems, and then we also had a rental business where we had maybe 15, 20 of those, and we would take them to the big meets and augment other people's
just
systems.
All through the Midwest or beyond?
All over the U.S., for sure. And then after wrestling, football, basketball, all incandescent displays. And then a big milestone for us is in the 1980, we were awarded the contract for the Olympics in Lake Placid. And that was an 82 Olympics. 1980 or 82? I think
80.
80 is
Lake
was
Placid
the Olympics.
And that 84
yeah,
was,
so it was the late
Sarajevo.
70s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Late 70s, and we got the Lake Placid contract. And that really put us on a new level.
So you did all the scoreboards for that?
Yep.
Okay.
All of the downhill and cross country.
And when did you cut over to LED?
In the late 80s, we actually had three technologies that we were doing. We were doing LED, indoor really, and we were doing a lot of incandescent and then some reflective. We actually had a pixel that electromechanical, you hit it with a pulse, it turned black, you hit it with another pulse.
Well, like the flip discs?
Yep.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Those things are still around, they're cool.
Yeah, and the LED in early 90s, you started to see a blue. Cree was maybe the first one that I remember seeing.
Right.
And then in the mid-90s, the blue became commercially viable, and so we came up with full-color LED. But before then, we were doing monochrome or red-green, or red-green-amber displays. And both outdoor and indoor, we did some traffic systems with LED. And then in 94, don't date check me, I'm just getting close with my dates. We did a large contract in Times Square for one of the big investment firms on the north west side of the square. We did two big red-green boards, red-green-amber boards on the sides. And then we did these tickers.
Yeah.
And you would see those tickers in TV bits and news bits all over.
Yeah.
Because it was just kind of mesmerizing and made the market real.
And that was kind of your introduction to the whole idea of spectacular displays?
Oh, we had done spectaculars as incandescents before.
Okay. Okay.
But it's an example of how we had used LED in different ways,
right,
indoor and outdoor, before the blue became viable. And then our first real video, LED video, went in 97. But before then, we went from big 30 and 50 watt bulbs down to these little wedge-based xenon lamps that you would find in maybe your car taillights and things like that.
Yeah.
And so then this idea to have more and more resolution by packing the pixels closer together, we had an inch and a half wedge-based, we called it, and we had the ability to do gradient levels. I believe we had 64 gradient levels, and so we were doing pseudo video for minor league and high schools, and then some of these, you could call them spectaculars, mainly for out-of-home advertising and special situations, and they would put in some really quite large systems.
So by the early 2010s, you're quite a big player in this whole area. You're driving big outdoor media boards. You're driving big replay boards in stadiums. You've got some of the biggest stadium displays out there, right?
Oh, yeah. Mercedes-Benz Arena.
Yeah, so the new one at the Atlanta Stadium. Yeah, I mean, that's massive.
Yeah. That's an Oculus where you're putting a display on the inside structure.
Yeah.
And they're tricky. We did another big Oculus at the Barclays Arena up in New York. Mm-hmm. Outside the arena, kind of a sculpturist type of thing. And on the inside of that, we put an LED band that went all the way around. And there's do they call it the teardrop? There's a spot where it drops down low, and we put LED in there as well.
So let's say 5 to 7 years ago, there were a handful of companies that were well-known big players in this space. There was DAC, there was Barco, Sony came and went as Jumbotron.
There was a lot of players. Mitsubishi stayed.
I guess Lighthouse was big for
Lighthouse.
A while.
The players changed, but there's usually a fair number of competitors out there.
Mm-hmm.
Barco would come in and out, yeah.
I'm curious of your take of how LED has
really exploded in the last, let's say, 3-4 years. We're at a show that 4 or 5 years ago, there might have been one or two companies that even had LED displays, and now there's a lot of them, and you go to an ISE or something like that, and they're everywhere, and there's a bunch of companies I've never even heard of that you're now competing against.
In Asia right now, China specifically, there's hundreds, maybe over 1,000 companies that could do this. And then there's other companies that rep them. And so you might come to a show and you would see some really big booths. And some of them are manufacturers, some of them are repping other manufacturers. Mm-hmm. But we started to see that, to us, it's not unusual.
Okay.
When we started to do video, there wasn't really a show to go to. So we started to attend NAB every year. That's where people would go to do video.
Right.
And IBC is the European Comic-Con.
Yep.
And then
back in Amsterdam.
Back in Amsterdam. Yeah, I would do fall and winter. We've been at ISE since it was basically founded. And we would get good leads out of the NAB show.
Yeah.
And then sometime in mid-aughts, like 04, 05, the amount of LED that were in the other shows that we attended in various aspects of our business was really high. There was a lot of LED there.
Yeah.
And so then we brought our presence at NAB down. I don't think we have a booth there now, but we dropped our presence at NAB down, and we upped it in these other shows because you would get a more targeted audience. You could position better for that audience. And I would say ISE is kind of like NAB was before it splintered into all this other stuff.
Right.
So we've kind of seen this ebb and flow and go up and down before.
So as a company that's using Made in America product, like everybody's getting components from various places, but it's Made in America, you've got Made in America labor costs and everything else. How do you compete with these hundreds or thousands of Shenzhen companies and elsewhere who can sell their product that looks to an untrained eye almost as good or pretty darn good for, let's say, a quarter of the price?
I think it's sometimes inexpensive, but I don't think it's quite a quarter, but maybe.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
And it didn't look awful.
Couple of things to say. One is that we do a lot of automation, so we're a highly mechanized company, and we've learned that the quality of the end product has a lot to do with the quality of what you build it with, the components.
Yeah.
And if you look especially at the outdoor business, where you're putting this on, you know, 120-foot poles, it's out in the elements, pollution, other things, you can have 5 displays work great, and then you can have 4 that that you can really struggle with. And so unless we build it ourselves, it was hard to get the quality that we needed from the product, the base product, and then the overall reliability for the 10 years that our customers were looking for.
There's a big educational challenge because you're having to try to educate the buyers and the integrators about things like bins and the type of LED dyes used and everything else. How do you get over that?
Well, we try our best, right? We try to educate. We also have a tiered product line today. So we have a product that we can configure differently and use less expensive components. And it drops this price gap that you were describing dramatically.
Right.
And we have an operation in Shanghai, and we have access to the same components these other companies use.
Right.
And we can build one for the same price that they, for what we believe they're building it for.
Right.
But it doesn't work the way we want our displays to work.
Right.
And you may get one to work, but then the next two.
Right.
And then it hasn't been viable for us to build in that manner.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to you browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
Is there product for, like, is product made for the Chinese market different than products made for North American and European market in terms of the expectations of quality and everything?
Yeah, for sure.
And you'd be known primarily as an outdoor company, or at least from my point of view.
Yeah.
Are you doing much in terms of fine pitch LED for the indoor market, and how is that going?
Yeah, so I would argue that we may do more indoor than any other company.
Okay.
A lot of our indoor is seen in sports stadiums where you've got the gondola hanging from the center of the center on display and
right.
all of the stuff that goes around.
But lower res, not fine pitch.
It depends on what you're describing. You know, yeah. 5 years ago, it was true. Fine pitch.
So fine pitch now is like sub 2.5 generally.
And today we have a 1.9 and a 2.5, and at ISE we showed a prototype of our sub 1 millimeter product. We're probably a year out from that, but we just installed for the Minnesota Twins some really nice displays. In their club area, there are these high-end lounges that they have. It's nice.
Is it more, with all this competition that's come into the marketplace and Unilumin and all these other companies that maybe people never heard of before, is it more challenging to do business, or is, as you've been saying, we've seen this before, this is just the next version of this?
It hasn't changed. One of the things that kept us out of the really fine pitch is we couldn't buy a product that would pass our reliability tests.
Yeah.
And if you're going to have a customer for life and be there with them and replace a display in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, it needs to work as you committed to. Mm-hmm. And the reliability of those packages was less, and it was just tough to try to get the reliability
right.
up. What we have now, we believe, is the most reliable product on the market. It meets our reliability standards. It's really good.
And I suspect that helps you a great deal in that I've spoken with other North American manufacturers who just say, guys, yes, you can buy it cheaper from Shenzhen, or in some way you're going to save money, but there's no real support, service and support that you're going to find stateside. You're talking about 12-hour time zones and everything else.
And they're trying to, that's exactly right. And these other companies are trying to, you know, bridge that gap in some way, but it's not the same. When you come in 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, not every customer wants to do another CapEx drop. They expect the product will
right.
last over the long term. And if you can't service it, and it takes foresight and planning to service it, and and most of our competitors in China, that's not a worldview that is common for them, and so that's a
right.
real stretch for those guys to grasp.
In terms of technology that's emerging, I'm walking around DSC here, just over there, Sony again has its crystal LED display, which I guess is chip on board, or something like that.
Oh yeah, there's all kinds of stuff, chip on board, and micro LED, and it's getting into, but I think what we're going to see is a race to have something like a half millimeter, maybe even less. And then what is the right application for those product lines?
Yeah.
I'm not sure myself, but it'll be fun to find out, right?
I gather the big manufacturing challenge there is, how do you find machinery that's going to be able to mass manufacture little tiny LEDs quickly enough to build these huge displays?
That is an issue or one of the challenges, but there's hundreds of others, right, to shrink it down and to do it this way. Many of these newer technologies, they don't want to do a wire bond. It's too expensive to do the wire bond. So
right.
do you have a different structure at the LED dye level? How do you attach it to the substrate? Is it a fiberglass substrate? Is it a silicon substrate? Do you, all of this stuff is being explored by many companies.
Right.
And it's exciting to see, and it'll bring out a different class of products. Or maybe not in the next year. I think you'll see stuff like what we demoed, but I think Samsung has one, and Sony has one. But when will it be commercially available? Realistically, probably more than a year out, my prediction.
Is this a little bit like other technologies where it becomes this specs and features race, where the pixel pitch needs to get tighter and tighter and tighter, when really, in a lot of cases, whatever pixel pitch is available right now, like a 1.2 or whatever, is perfectly fine for damn near every application?
Yeah, it depends.
Yeah.
People buy things for all kinds of different reasons. I'm an older guy now, so it's hard for me to read my watch without my glasses on or my cell phone.
Yeah.
How much resolution do I need?
Yeah.
A younger person might want that, but if I'm going to go buy, it's like the digital camera on my phone. Oh, it's 20 megapixels now, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if the lens supports the quality at that level, but who's going to buy a 10 when you can get a 20?
Really? Is there a particular piece of technology or an advancement within the LED business that you're really waiting for?
Well, I mean, we put 30 million into product development every year. So we're continuing to invest in the technology, the displays, the control systems to put the content up there. We have our own services team that not only does the technical service, but helps our customers with whatever level they are on the expertise to run and operate and manage these things, so that we can enable them in whatever way they need to be successful.
Right.
And all of those take time and development and nurturing. On the LED side, a lot of exciting stuff going on at this fine pitch, and we're excited to be there. Am I waiting for that? I don't think so. I think many of our customers are using products in a creative way and are imagining how these big systems are going to help them in a multitude of ways. And they're not, okay, could I have something of a higher res? Could I have this or that? That's not as much of a hindrance as let's use our imagination. Can we get the permits? And what's the CapEx like? And so I don't think there's something really holding us back right now.
I was intrigued by, I went to Shenzhen about 3 months ago.
Sure.
And I saw a couple of products.
Good time of the year. You should go back in like July or August. That's also fun.
And I can go to Orlando if I want to sweat. And I saw a handful of manufacturers that had, it was a LED tile, but it had a hardened coating on it. So it was like a ceramic tile, and therefore the LED packages were protected.
Yeah, so we've got a surface mount technology that has been used for years and you've seen tons of. Then there's a chip on board where you put the chip down and then wire bond to it and then cover it with some type of coating.
Yeah.
We built those today ourselves. All of us have dissatisfaction with the optics.
Okay.
How do you make that look good? And there's like, maybe at the edge of that coating, there's bright lines, and you have to deal with that. And then there's these other more exotic things like micro LED and different ways to remove the wire bond. All of that is areas where we're investing as well as our competitors.
Okay.
And I think those are, like I said, it's an exciting world. It's coming, a lot of change. But are we waiting for those? Is it holding something back? Is the way I interpreted your question, and I don't see that
today. I just look at some of the fine pitch stuff out there and think this looks beautiful, but it worries the hell out of me in retail environments and public environments like mass transit, where you've got the surface mounted chips exposed to the public and luggage handles and everything else, and you see the damage.
And the fine pitch is more delicate than some of the others, and we've had some outdoor product that to get the reliability where we wanted it, we've actually encapsulated it, so we've covered it. So we've got some of this experience with going over the top of the LEDs and still managing the light.
So it'll
properly
get there, and you can still get the heat out and everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's switch gears a little bit. About 2 years ago, you guys acquired a company just up the road from me called AdFlow.
Oh, yeah.
Digital signage software company. I got made aware of that, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. So I'm curious, because we've never spoken about, what was the motivation there?
Well, we have three main areas of our business. It's the sports, it's the commercial, and the transportation business. And increasingly, those are blending together.
Yeah.
And in the commercial business, we would have out-of-home advertising and then on-premise. And on-premise is, it's advertising, but it's really for the owner and motivating a business, not yeah. just an image. And we've done a lot in the on-premise business, but we hadn't made the inroads into the indoor and the retail space. And AdFlow has a really nice business in the retail space environment. Mm-hmm. And we felt both sides that it was a really nice fit, that what they did and what we did really complemented each other.
Okay.
On the business side as well as on the technology side.
Was it a need to up your game in terms of the quality of the software that you had to drive the displays? Because, you know, a lot of cases, you know, you needed to get something on the board that was always going to stay there.
Personally, the software they have is very nice, and we have software that does similar things. And so as part of an integration, we're trying to get the best of what they have and the best of what we have and move towards a combined platform.
Uh-huh.
But the real driver wasn't as much the software itself as the business, the business of indoor retail.
So you've been at it for a couple of years now. Are you finding that you're being exposed into retail work that you otherwise would not have come anywhere near?
For instance, we just did the Oklahoma Thunder. I'm not sure the name of their arena now, but it's the NBA basketball team.
Right.
And we put basically one of AdFlow's systems in all around in their food areas.
Their different
food service. It's not just one. You know, they rebrand
right.
them, but it's the same displays. And that we see that as being a growing business.
Okay. So normally you would go in as the supplier to do the big LED boards, the ribbon boards, and things like that. But that's where you stop. You don't touch the concourse. But now you can do that too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
So you can be the single point of contact, single vendor for.
Yeah. And we've done some nice things there, and what we bring a lot is this video streams.
Okay.
Because they want to put a video stream on these screens.
Right.
And it's a good match.
So what's going on with you guys for the next year? What's the big drive that you could tell me about?
Well, you know, it's all of this exciting stuff we're doing.
Give me your full roadmap.
We're doing some nice baseball projects. We see a lot of growth in international. We've got some good things going on overseas.
Okay.
I think we'll continue to invest in our displays. We continue to invest in our control system. We continue to invest in our processes and our people.
Mm.
And I think we'll continue to stay at the front of the pack as this business continues to grow and develop.
So all this, as you said a couple times now, this big explosion of all these LED companies, all these new ones coming in, and the trade show like this where we're getting blinded from every corner.
It's eerily familiar to me.
You've seen this movie before.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for spending the time.
Hey, Dave. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 The Blog and now the podcasts are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.